Hello, here is your KVNF regional newscast for Thursday, July 12th. Free, healthy summer meals are available to anyone age 18 and under at over 500 locations across Colorado. Eric Gladys has more.
Summer activities for kids are at full pitch, and Colorado parents may not realize that many of the same pools and recreation centers where kids meet up with their friends are also offering free nutritious meals for anyone age 18 and under. Ellie Agar with the group Hunger Free Colorado says the federally funded summer meals program serves up healthy food at more than 500 community sites across the state.
There's no registration, there's no income requirements. Anyone can go, kids and teens, sometimes even reduce cost meals for parents and get these meals so they've got fuel to get through the months and be ready to go back to school when we hit the fall.
While the program is aimed at kids who rely on school meals, Agar says it also helps parents who struggle to stretch food budgets when cafeterias close for summer. The program has launched a new texting feature to help locate meal sites with a smartphone. Just text the word food or comida to 877-877. The service will ask for your zip code and show locations near you. Maps and other information are also available online at kidsfoodfinder.org. Community sites that offer a range of options for breakfast, lunch, supper, and even afternoon snacks include churches, schools, and recreation centers. Agar says most locations organize fun activities for kids to help keep their minds sharp until school is back in session.
At recreation centers, there's often sports and games. We found it's great for children academically as well as physically to be able to have these sites with enrichment activities as well as nutritious meals.
1 in 7 Colorado kids frequently doesn't know where their next meal is coming from, and Agar says the summer meals program is an important tool for fighting hunger. Last year, more than 1.5 million meals were served, and the program could hit or exceed that number this summer. This is Eric Gladys reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
The tamarisk gets a bad rap. The plant, also known as salt cedar, is the subject of full eradication campaigns throughout western watersheds. But some scientists say tamarisk's reputation as a water-guzzling invader is too harsh. Reporter Ray Ellen Bichelle of the Mountain West News Bureau filed this story about the misunderstood southwestern villain.
We've got people crouching in the tall grass, moving around almost on hands and knees, and they're carrying huge knives.
Two more.
The knives are called hori hori, a Japanese tool made specifically for gutting weeds. Others are carrying gardening shears.
So you got a full-on saw.
Yes, the tool of destruction.
But the enemy far outnumbers them. We're in a hot field in Longmont, Colorado, at a volunteer weeding event that's been going on for a few years now. Some people come every year.
It's going to be a few more years before we can kind of give up on this because they're sneaky.
The enemy is the tamarisk, a small tree with a prehistoric look to it, tall, with scaly leaves and tiny pink flowers. They look delicate, but the kind of delicate that makes them indestructible. Like if they got stepped on by a dinosaur, they might just bounce right back up again. It reminds one volunteer of a magical plant in Harry Potter.
You grasp your mandrake firmly, you pull it sharply out of the pot.
That's what I keep picturing every time I pull one.
People hate the tamarisk. It was brought to the U.S. in the late 1800s for erosion control and also decoration. But as the story goes, the tamarisk has been colonizing waterways, hogging water from other plants, and even salting the earth ever since, choking out native species like cottonwood trees and willows. There are weeding projects like this one going on all over the West. Across the mountains, there's even a state lab that's breeding beetles whose sole purpose is to assassinate tamarisk.
This is a war.
That's Matt Chu. He's a historian of invasion biology at Arizona State University. And he thinks this war is aimed at the wrong enemy.
There's been a concerted effort to demonize tamarisk.
Starting, he says, back in the 1930s, a company called Phelps Dodge wanted to expand a copper mine in Arizona, but didn't have enough water rights. All the local water rights had already been allocated.
What they needed was an excuse to say there was more water in the river so that Phelps Dodge could have more water.
Chu says when they looked at the nearby river, they saw lots of tamarisk. if we can convince people that the plants are sucking water out of the river, they thought, then they could kill the tamarisk and the mine could get the rights to that extra water.
Well, Phelps Dodge did a bunch of experiments, which were later picked up by the Agriculture Department.
And the mine ended up getting its water rights another way. But it didn't matter for the tamarisk. Its image was already destroyed. To make matters worse, something big was changing. The way that water was being moved through the West. Anna Scher is an invasive species biologist at the University of Denver.
In order to accommodate many human needs, we have dammed and channelized our rivers.
Which means they're flowing and flooding in ways that are good for the tamarisk, not so good for native plants. Scher agrees with Chu. The tamarisk isn't all bad. In recent years, researchers showed that tamarisk actually uses up the same amount of water as other river plants, including cottonwoods. And it turns out it also provides a good nesting spot for certain birds.
I certainly do not hate this plant, and I believe that it's only behaving badly because of the way that we've managed our rivers.
But that, she says, is not going to change anytime soon. So instead of addressing limited water, which is the root of the war, we're stuck fighting battles with the tamarisk, plant by plant.
It's a new game now with tamarisks here and with the water needs that we have now.
But though the trees might be fire resistant and drought resistant and able to reproduce like bunnies, Scher says those battles aren't totally futile. Her research has found that clearing out tamarisk can make space for native species to regrow. You just have to stay zen about what native plants might come back. They might be drought-adapted shrubs and grasses, not shady cottonwoods. And they will most certainly have a tamarisk or two as neighbors. I'm Ray Ellen Bichelle.
Arizona continues to struggle to find ways to cut back water use from the Colorado River without injuring the farmers who rely on it. KJZZ's Casey Kuhn covered a meeting of water managers yesterday in Phoenix.
It was a meeting of the water mines in Phoenix as local, regional, and federal policy directors came together to answer questions. Central Arizona Project General Manager Ted Cook says they're bringing in a diverse group of stakeholders to help create the drought contingency plan.
We hope to avoid that situation of any kind of battles on one hand or lack of decision on the other hand.
Arizona's plan, if drought brings Lake Mead down to dire levels, is still being hammered out. The plan going forward is to discuss key issues with the committee, including impacts on agriculture. Under the proposed cutback plan, Central Arizona farmers would be hit the hardest. The current plan cuts back half of the Colorado River water used by Arizona farmers when Lake Mead first falls below a certain point. The new plan would cut all of the water Arizona farmers use as soon as the lake falls to that point. I'm Casey Kuhn.
And that was your KVNF regional newscast for Thursday. For KVNF News, I'm Eric Gould. Thanks so much for listening.